we are faced with a big story or when we are dealing with a big story in Major League Baseball, it's only fitting that we bring in the fifth Beatle, John Paul Morosi, a national baseball writer for Fox Sports. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well, Jeff. I understand it's a pretty busy news day in the beautiful city of Toronto.
Well, the Raptors won, so yeah.
The Leafs? How are the Leafs doing?
The Raptors won, and Toronto FC is playing its first playoff game ever tonight. And and the Raptors won. So
okay, all right, all right.
We'll just leave it at that.
Okay, very good.
What's the reaction been around the industry this morning to this announcement?
Well, Jeff, I think it's very interesting because there is a lot of surprise, I believe. And even though looking back, maybe we should have seen this coming, the fact that there was not a new contract in place for Alex by the time the playoffs ended or even the regular season ended. But I think the one thing about this that makes it really surprising is the fact that Alex is walking away at a time when there are not a lot of other options for him immediately. And I think that's the interesting part about this, that there obviously at this point in time, there is not a single active GM search out there. You could say the Marlins have any number of situations right now, but that's not really a place that I see Alex walking into. There's so much ingrained institutional dysfunction in Miami right now that I don't think that's where Alex wants to go.
Right.
So I think, and also, Jeff, you look around the big picture, there have been so many different GM openings that have been filled across the industry in the last 16 months that you almost expect to be in a bit of a down cycle in terms of the number of openings that even come available in the next year or so. So I think Alex Anthopoulos, it's a very honorable decision, a very bold decision for him to walk away. And from a standpoint of immediate GM employment elsewhere, I would describe it as something of a risky decision as well.
Well, you know, you leave a five-year contract on the table. That's pretty ballsy.
Yes.
Even if you're 38 years old and, you know, possessed with you've got a pretty good track record after this year, and you've certainly got, I mean, you know, Alex is a nice guy, but Alex is well aware of how good he is, too. And I mean that positively. I mean, Alex is aware of his strengths, and Alex is aware that he will, you know, certainly be able to market himself. I mean, I'd heard in the past couple of days that there had been feelers from Andrew Friedman and the Los Angeles Dodgers about an advisory job, which, you know, whether that would be a one-year deal or a two-year deal. Typically when these things happen, John, you tend to look for, you look at where a guy's friends are in the industry. Billy Bean's another guy. Like I think Alex Anthopoulos is going to be making some sort of baseball decision for some team this year.
Well, a couple things. I think that those are two very interesting possibilities. And something you're touching on, Jeff, in general is Alex Anthopoulos is very well liked among the GM fraternity. And I had a GM earlier this year describe it to me that Alex is not somebody that is stuck to one clique. That basically when the GM meetings would take place and all 30 of them would be in the same room, that Alex, from a social standpoint, moved among all the circles, which is really a good attribute to have. I think that, and I think the fact that he is very well liked, very popular, very well respected among that fraternity, I think bodes very well for him having a job with a team that he likes right now, even if it's not as the GM. And I think that maybe taking a step back, I think all of us look at Alex and we know obviously his ties to Canada and how much he loves working and living in the country where he's from. But I also think if you took that piece of it away and if you said, okay, Alex, let's just sort of say City A, City B, City C, or Team ABC, and looked around the grand landscape of things, and if philosophically he felt like he was not going to have a lot of decision-making power under Mark Shapiro, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
if he felt like his philosophy didn't align with that of Mark Shapiro, you could easily see then Alex stepping back and saying, well, wait a minute. I've got a lot of friends in this industry. I've got a lot of people that really value my opinion a lot. I might be able to go somewhere else and work with people that I'm more philosophically aligned with. Maybe it's not in the city and the country where I've lived for a long time, but it's a different place, and it's a spot where I can be involved. And also, by the way, a lot of these situations, Jeff, he could probably still live in Toronto or live wherever he wants to live. And I think that there's a lot of flexibility there for him, and I think the fact that he is so well-liked, there are places in the industry that really value what he does, he might have just figured, listen, I'd like to work somewhere where my opinion is going to carry a lot of weight, and perhaps right now, based on today's news, that place is not Toronto.
What does Mark Shapiro have to do now when he comes in here? You know, it's, I mean, he's replacing a guy who was really popular. And, you know, it's like Alex has been a GM here for 6 years. And like any GM who's been in one place for 6 years, his track record is, it's okay. It's not great. It's not horrible. I mean, every GM has been in one place for 6 years, unless he's winning the World Series every year. I mean, there are going to be some blemishes in that record. But I made the point earlier in my show, the thing Alex always gave fans the impression, or fans took the impression, that there was always a possibility that something might happen with Alex. You know, people used to talk about how he was the ninja GM, and then there was that deal with the Miami Marlins, and then R.A. Dickey, and then, of course, the deals he made at the trade deadline. And then when the Jays won the American League East, we saw that scene in the clubhouse in Baltimore where he's basically the guy leading the champagne shower out of the break. It was like a frat party almost, with Alex being very much in the middle and being serenaded by the fans, all that stuff. Now Mark Shapiro comes into this situation. What's the first thing he has to do when I'm presuming he's going to have a media conference or talk to the press at some point early next week? What's the first thing Mark Shapiro has to do?
I think he has to give, first and foremost, a clear vision of what he agreed with, I think, with the way that this team is built, and maybe also what the new direction is going to be. I think also at some point in time, he's now going to have to give a fairly detailed and nuanced accounting of why Alex is no longer the GM. And again, this is Alex's decision, but obviously it's predicated on the approach that was taken to him by Mark Shapiro on some level. If Mark came to Alex at the very start of this process and said, listen, I will have no more say-so on baseball decisions or baseball philosophies than did Paul Beeston, and here's your five-year contract, I think he is the GM right now, and we're not even having that conversation today about Alex Anthopoulos' future. I think it would have been done by now. Obviously, that's not what happened. So I think that from a standpoint of candor, transparency, I think Mark has to give some sort of accounting for why Alex didn't come back, and knowing full well that I think the simple explanation of, well, we offered him a contract and he said no, that's not good enough, I don't think. I think there has to be more detail there and a forthright, on-the-record accounting of what happened. And I think we're all aware in the sports business there are people that are excellent executives who don't always see eye to eye. I think at this point in time, Mark is going to have to portray this as precisely that we had a full exchange of ideas. The way I wanted to run the organization, the way Alex wanted to run the organization, weren't the same, and as difficult as this is, it was probably the best thing for everybody involved. I think that has to be the way that it's said, because if it's not, and if there's not a clear distinction here, then I think even ownership has a tough explanation to offer here, because If Alex's vision was the one they wanted, then they should have hired him as the president of baseball operations or the president of the club. And that to me is going to be the very interesting thing here. How do they rectify those two things? And this obviously is Mark Shapiro's job, but also to a certain extent ownership's as well.
In conversation with John Paul Morosi on Baseball Central, indications are that at least initially there won't be a tremendous cull of people in the Blue Jays front office. We know, of course, that when a new president comes in, especially when the new president has come in and has supplanted a general manager, which is in effect what has happened here. And we don't know, I might add, we don't know yet whether or not Mark Shapiro will be hiring a general manager, will be hiring a senior advisor, whether or not he'll assume some of the responsibilities. We don't know that yet. And that he might, I mean, I don't know. It's just pure conjecture on my part. I'm just throwing that out there as a possibility. But, knowing all that, how concerned would you be if you were John Gibbons right now?
great question. I think that I would not be terribly concerned. Okay. And again, easy for me to say. But I think obviously he has a contract for next year. And I think that when you look at the big picture here, if you're Mark Shapiro, you almost can't afford to alienate the fan base further by replacing the manager, who I think by all accounts his popularity certainly has grown. I think that his popularity in Toronto, frankly, now, Jeff, is at an all-time high. So if you're going to have the changeover already with the front office, I would think stability in the dugout would be valued. And I also think John Gibbons, and you know him better than I know him, and we both know him pretty well, he's an excellent person, and he's also an easy person to work with. I can't imagine a new GM is going to come in, and after meeting with John Gibbons, as easy to get along with as he is, to say, I can't work with this guy. That's not the way John is. So I think that from that standpoint, John's easygoing personality and just overall likability and his genuineness, I think all of that's going to play into John's favor now and probably contribute to him coming back. Because I think that you need that stability. I think the field staff seem to work quite well together this year. They got better as the year went along. So I think all those things, I can see John being the perfect guy to say, listen, whatever's going on upstairs is going on upstairs. We're going to play ball. We're the defending American League East champions. We got a title to defend. We had a tremendous amount of excitement about the way things went this past year. And let's just forget about whatever drama's happening upstairs, and we're just going to play games. I think that's going to be, I'm sure, John's approach. And I think that's going to be a very effective message in Dunedin on day one. Because, frankly, Jeff, you and I both know the amount of pressure that was on both Alex and John at the start of the season. In some respects, it should be a much easier 2016 to manage pressure and expectations than it was in 2015.
Would you think this would have any impact on the Jays' ability to re-sign David Price or to offer a new contract to Marco Estrada? I mean, exercising the options on Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion, and Ari Dickey, certainly the first two of them are no-brainers. You know, we can have a baseball discussion about Ari Dickey, but quite frankly, in terms of economics, not doing it would be, I mean, from my point of view, would be silly. But in terms of David Price, in terms of maybe negotiating an extension with Edwin or Jose or getting Josh Donaldson's name in a long-term contract, is this changeover going to have any impact? I mean, I guess we have to wait and see whether or not Mark Shapiro adheres to a five-year contract limit, won't we, ultimately?
And that's exactly what I was going to say. I think that with Mark Shapiro, and to Mark's credit, he has remained so much in the background and effectively refusing to really weigh in on what's going to happen with the 2016 Blue Jays to this point. And I give Mark credit for that. I think if the goal was to be named this position back in August, I believe it was, and not take over until now, and not be a story, really, until now, he succeeded. I mean, there was not a cent, really, during the Jays postseason run of Mark Shapiro being around and or making news in any way, shape, or form. So I give Mark an immense amount of credit for that, for the ability to stay in the background while the team was still playing. Now, of course, we need to hear from him what the Jays' identity is going to be as an organization under his leadership. We know, obviously, he's had to deal with, for many, many years in Cleveland, a low-ish payroll, one of the lowest attended ball clubs in all of baseball. Their attendance has been dreadful in Cleveland for a number of years, right there on a level with Tampa Bay. It's been that bad. So they've had to deal with the economic reality there in Cleveland of having sort of a middling team. Well, now you've got a team that came two wins away from reaching the World Series, which in some respects, based on the way the World Series has gone, you might be able to say the Jays were the second-best team in the playoffs. So, and that means both leagues. So you look at this whole big picture here and say, well, what's the plan going to be? Where is your payroll limit going to be? What's your philosophy on spending on mid-career to slash late-career players? What's your opinion on pitching? What's your opinion on how you're going to diversify your risk in the starting rotation given the amount of guys you have coming up for free agency, as you talked about? So I think that we have to hear And there's so many unknowns, Jeff, because we don't know how Mark Shapiro would operate with a large payroll because he frankly hasn't had that. Mm-hmm. But I do remember at that opening press conference when he talked about why he is doing this, why he's going to Toronto now, he spoke a lot about the opportunity of the city, of the country, of the market size, of the revenue streams. Mark Shapiro did not come to Toronto and take this job to run the Jays like the Indians. So I do think that we're going to see a stronger payroll probably in maybe as soon as next year. But I certainly think in 2 or 3 years' time than what we've seen in years past for Toronto. And Mark is coming here because of the opportunity. So I think that's going to be the key thing. What does he make of the opportunity, and how do his philosophies change because of the different market reality in which he's in? That's a fascinating question, and one that I think we're going to hear from Mark Shapiro about probably in the next week.
John, much has been made of Terry Francona having an opt-out clause in his contract in the event that Mark left. Now, a lot of people, myself included, when Mark left, I thought Terry Francona was probably going to be a candidate for the Washington Nationals job. You know, we know what Terry Francona's reputation is. He's a guy who can work well with big personalities, teams that need to win now. He's a very useful guy to have as a manager if you're in that situation. You just look at the things that he did and the things he did with the Boston Red Sox. But is there any chance, do you think, here at all that things are put in motion that see Terry Francona possibly managing the Toronto Blue Jays at some point?
I would say it's pretty low right now, at least. I think that you look at the big picture there, he's got a very good, Terry Francona that is, has a very good relationship with Chris Antonetti, who now is the Indians president of baseball operations. And when he went to Cleveland, Terry talked a lot about the overall working relationships, the atmosphere in Cleveland, the stability there, the collegiality that he had with a lot of the people in the front office there, and just sort of the joy of getting back to a pure baseball environment away from all the drama that had been in Boston. Now, Terry wants to win, and I do think that there would be that winning aspect, that potential, that possibility of doing that in Toronto that would certainly be very attractive to him. But he is very comfortable in Cleveland. He lives still, Jeff, I believe, in the offseason in Arizona, which makes the Indians, because they train out there, a very good personal fit for him from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, those are little things, but I do think they matter to a manager. And you know, I think he's been pretty content in Cleveland. They have a chance to win, I believe, next year. I thought they were going to have a very good ball club this year. They of course, finished 81-80. So I think that they're in a spot where I would be surprised if Terry left, Jeff. I would, but it wouldn't totally shock me, just because I do know that how strongly he feels about Mark Shapiro, and also how much he wants to win. So he's been in the American League East before. Again, I would say, would it totally shock me? No, but I would be at least mildly surprised if we saw Terry Francona managing the Jays within the next couple seasons.
Mr. Morosi, I'm going to let you run. I appreciate you doing this.
My pleasure, Jeff. I have a sneaking suspicion, not our final conversation on this subject.
What are you doing tomorrow?
we'll talk then. That sounds good.
Absolutely.
Maybe some new developments even by then. We'll have some fun with it.
Absolutely. Take care.
Sounds great, Jeff. Thank you.